Turn with me, if you would, to Ecclesiastes. It's right after Proverbs. Say a little more about this in a second, but Ecclesiastes was written by Solomon. You might not remember, but about a month ago, I preached a sermon on Proverbs 3, 5 through 8. We talked a little bit about the fact that Solomon, who wrote many of the Proverbs as well, was a very wise man. Solomon wrote over 3,000 Proverbs. There's only 500 in the book of Proverbs. So he was a prolific writer. We know that he was a very wise man. When God came and asked him what God could give him, what did Solomon ask for but understanding to lead God's people? And God answered. Solomon entertained wise men from all over the earth because of his great depth of knowledge. And if you remember, the Queen of Sheba even came to see Solomon. And her comment was basically, you know, I didn't believe what I heard, Solomon. But now that I've seen everything, the half has not been told. You are an incredibly wise man. Well, let me tell you something. God did not make Solomon wise only. He made him rich. Let me tell you. Solomon had an extensive empire, mainly because of his father. But if you think about Israel today, Israel probably covers about an area just west of the Mediterranean, probably about 120, 125 miles in length. When Solomon was there, his empire covered probably around 400 miles up the Mediterranean coast. In fact, he even influenced all the way to the Euphrates. So Solomon was influential. He controlled the trading routes. If you just look at a map, you will see real quick that to the south of Israel is Egypt. And the only place that Egypt is going to trade by land is by going north. And that means they have to go through Israel. Not only that, but everyone who comes from the east would come across the top of Israel. And everyone who would go north into Grecian area, into Asia Minor, they would also have to travel that road. Solomon was no slouch. He made sure that he profited from all that trade. Not only did he have the trade routes covered, he had two fleets of ships that operated. One out of the Red Sea to his south and one off the Mediterranean, where he traded and gained many, many products. How rich was Solomon? Well, listen to this. One day of eating in Solomon's court, 1,450 buckets. That's Home Depot buckets, okay? About 5 gallon buckets. 1,450 buckets of grain and flour for one day. 30 oxen every day were slaughtered for food. 100 sheep every day. Not only that, but there were numerous deer, gazelles, plenty of fattened fowl to eat. He was an incredible man. You know how much money Solomon made in a year? Now, this is a little skeptical, but listen to this. Scripture tells us that Solomon took in 666 gold talents every year. Just hang on to that. And you know what? That was not everything, because that didn't include all the trading and all the money he received from the Arabian kings and from some of his own governors. Now, a talent is a weight. Happens to be about 75 pounds. Think about carrying around 75 pounds of gold. 75 pounds. Today, I thought, well, let's be very conservative. We'll take $1,500 an ounce as the price of gold. which is very conservative. If you go home and you multiply that out, do you realize that Solomon took in something close in our money today? $1.2 billion. Move over, Bill Gates and everybody else. He was incredible. But let me tell you something. We go to 1 Kings 11 and we find out what happened. Solomon's wives turned his heart away from God. God had warned Israel in Deuteronomy 17. The kings were not to accumulate horses because they would begin to trust in their wartime capability. They were not to increase wives. Why? Because those wives would probably turn their hearts from God. They were also not to accumulate money, wealth, gold, and silver. Why? Very simple. God wanted those kings to depend upon him. That was what was important. And not only were they to depend upon God, they were to write out the law of God, and they were to read it for themselves continually. So that they didn't just depend upon God, they knew God and they followed God. Solomon failed. Solomon failed. And yet, many conservative commentators believe that Solomon probably wrote Ecclesiastes toward the end of his life. Solomon wrote Song of Solomon, the romantic love story, probably in his early days. And through his lifetime, he accumulated all those proverbs that we've talked about. But then at the end of his life, I think that Solomon came back to God and he realized what life was all about. So this morning, we're going to take a look at Ecclesiastes. It will be quick, I hope. I work at it. I hope it'll be profitable for you to understand because this is important. Let me start out by reading Ecclesiastes 1, 1 through 11. The words of the preacher, that's how Solomon refers to himself, the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Vanity of vanities, says the preacher, vanities of vanities, all is vanity. What advantage does man have in all of his work which he does under the sun? A generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. Also, the sun rises and the sun sets, and hastening to its place, it rises there again. Blowing toward the south, then turning towards the north, the wind continues swirling along, and on its circular courses the wind returns. All the rivers flow into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place where the rivers flow, there they flow again. All things are wearisome. Man is not able to tell it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. That which has been is that which will be. And that which has been done is that which will be done. So there's nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one might say, see this, it's new. Already it has existed for ages, which were before us. There is no remembrance of earlier things. And also of the latter things which will occur, there will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. Wonderful to start out on such an optimistic note, isn't it? I want you to remember three things now as we move forward. A couple of things are just definitions because it's important to understand correctly what Solomon's talking about. First of all, I want you to understand the term vanity of vanities. Vanity is a Hebrew word meaning nothing more than breath. So go out this morning after church, take a deep breath and breathe out, see that vapor. That's what we're talking about. So what does that mean? as Solomon talks about vanity of vanities. Number one, when he repeats it, he means this is the ultimate vanity or futility. Now, this word has three sides to it. So hear this. Number one, the idea that it is fleeting or transitory. Just like a breath, it comes and it goes, just like that. I can't grab it. I can't keep it. It's gone. That's number one. Number two, it's futile and meaningless. You can't do anything with it, and it really doesn't mean much. There's no real meaning to it. Thirdly, it is incomprehensible and unintelligible. You can't understand it. Just as much as you and I understand the wind, we see the effects of the wind, but we don't always understand the wind. And we don't understand the vapor. And that's what Solomon is talking about. And as Solomon talks, you find that he uses vanity of vanities some 38 times in Ecclesiastes. The other word you're going to see a lot, or the other phrase, is going to be under the sun. Over and over again, you need to grab this because this is important. What is Solomon talking about when he talks about vanity, worthlessness, meaninglessness, futility? Solomon is talking about under the sun. What's under the sun? You and I in this earth. Solomon is discussing human perspective. This is Solomon's human perspective on life. Solomon says, I look around and I see everything that's going on here on the earth. I see men, I see their actions, I see what they do, what they don't do. I see what happens through nature. And you know what? It's futile. That is Solomon's premise. So, with that, let's jump in and see what Solomon comes up with. First of all, I want you to understand that Solomon is a product of progressive revelation. I don't know whether you've thought about this, but you and I well know that in Genesis, God did not reveal a whole lot of himself. There is revelation from God. But if you were to go to Revelation and say, well, is there more that God revealed? There's a lot more because we've gone through the whole Old Testament and the whole New Testament. But Solomon lived around 930 BC. So Solomon's revelation about who God was limited. Solomon had no New Testament to go read about the cross of Christ and the sacrifice of Jesus. So remember this and keep this in mind as we go forward. Solomon basically is telling us, you know, that everything is futile. Life is futile. I'm going to give you the verses. Feel free to just listen or feel free to follow me. But Solomon says in 1:13, I set my hand to seek and explore by wisdom concerning all that had been done under heaven. It is a grievous task which God has given to the sons of men to be afflicted with. All Solomon is saying is, you know what? I've been there, and it's hard to figure this thing out. God has given us a real, real tough time to come to a conclusion about what goes on here under the sun. Verse 17, and I set my mind to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. Even craziness and foolishness, Solomon said, I use my mind to try and understand and get a handle on these ideas. Solomon says, I realized that this also is striving after the wind. All I'm doing is chasing the wind. I can't figure it out. He closes the chapter by saying, because in much wisdom there is much grief. And increasing knowledge results in increasing pain. Isn't that true? Many times the more you and I know, we see the trouble more. If you look at chapter 2, Solomon then goes from wisdom and he says, you know what? I decided that I would look at pleasure. Verse 4, here's what he did. I enlarged my works. I built houses. I planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks. I planted all kinds of fruit trees. I made ponds of water. And they irrigated my forest. I had male and female slaves, and I had homeborn slaves. I possessed flocks and herds larger than anybody who had herds in Jerusalem before me. I eclipsed everyone. I collected for myself silver and gold, and I also provided myself with male and female singers for entertainment. And the pleasures of men, many concubines. No kidding. About 700. Then he says, I became great and increased more than all who preceded me in Jerusalem. My wisdom also stood by me. Anything my eyes desired, I did not refuse them. What's Solomon's conclusion? In 2:11, behold, all was vanity and striving after the wind. So Solomon says, well, I came back and thought about wisdom again. And he says, wisdom has got to be better. So I considered wisdom, and I recognized that wisdom exceeds folly. Wisdom is better than being foolish. That makes sense. That's good thinking. He says, the wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. And yet, Solomon says, one fate befalls them all. What is that? Remember, Solomon's talking about on earth. So Solomon's not talking about heaven or hell. He's talking about one fate. What's that one fate that everyone gets at the end? It's death. Very simply, Solomon says, you know, I saw the wise, I saw the fools, I saw everything going on. You know what? Isn't this weird? They all end up dead. That is Solomon's conclusion. Then he comes back and he says, how the wise man and the fool alike die. And he recognized the striving. At the end of chapter 2, Solomon comes back and he says, you know, thus I hated all the fruit of my labor for which I had labored under the sun. You know why? Because I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And Solomon says, and what's that mean? I'm going to leave everything that I've worked so hard for to somebody that hasn't even worked. They don't even know how to work. I'm going to give it all away. Why am I doing this? It's madness. It is futility. There is a refrain that we will hear in Ecclesiastes. Let me give it to you. It's in 2:24 through 26. Here's what Solomon says again and again. I will remind you often. There is nothing better for a man than to eat and drink and tell himself that his labor is good. Solomon says, eat and drink and appreciate your labor and your work. You know why? Because it's from the hand of God. That is what God has given you. We will talk more, but Solomon's sense is enjoy it because you're going to die. And that's what happens. Well, life is not just futile. Life is frustrating. Let's look at chapter 3. Very interesting because we have this famous poem. There is an appointed time for everything, and there is a time for every event under the heaven. And then Solomon sets opposites against each other. There's a time to give birth and a time to die. There's a time to plant and there's a time to uproot. We know that. He gets down, he says, there's a time to mourn, there's a time to dance. There's a time to throw stones and a time to gather stones together. He is probably talking about building enterprise. There's a time to collect those stones and build with them. There's times to push them out of the way and get rid of them. There's a time to keep, time to throw away. Some of you need to take that as your life verse. A time to love and a time to hate, a time for war and a time for peace. And then he says, you know, it is God who has made every single time appropriate on earth. That is God's work. Not only that, Solomon says, but in chapter 3, verse 11, he says, he, that is God, has also set eternity in their heart. That is mankind. What does that mean? It means that you and I, as humans, have a sense of eternity. We have a sense that there's something else out there. We have a desire for more. Sometimes that's not a good thing. But how many people today are totally locked in to doing everything they can do to gain a year or two out of their life? Or to make their life longer, or to control their life. Solomon says God has put that in man's heart. But the problem is God has not given them enough knowledge to know how God operates, what he does, and how he works. And so man will always be confounded by God because God knows man doesn't. Man just has this inkling, this desire, this sense within him about eternity. But he can't really understand God's plan. Solomon goes forward and he talks about the fact in 3:12, we hear the refrain again, I know there is nothing better for them than to rejoice and do good in one's lifetime. Moreover, every man who eats and drinks and sees good in his labor, there it is again, it's the gift of God. God is the one who gifts us because everything is appropriate in his time. But then Solomon comes back and he says, you know, the problem with that in verse 16 is that I have seen under the sun that in the place of justice, there is wickedness. Even when I go expecting to have justice done, I encounter wickedness. You and I better be able to relate to that today. But again, Solomon comes back to that theme of an appropriate time, and he said, I know that God will judge because God makes everything appropriate in its time. Well, moving to chapter 4, we find Solomon is frustrated by oppression. He says that he looked around, and you know what he saw? He says, I saw the tears of the oppressed, and that they had no one to comfort them. And on the side of their oppressors was power. The ones who oppressed had power and wealth, and they were able to wield it wherever they wanted. Yet those who suffered from what those people did had no one to comfort them. Solomon, very pessimistic, he says, so I congratulated the dead who were already dead more than the living who are still living. Solomon says, you know, I got to thinking, it's better to be dead than alive. And then it seems like he talked to Job because he comes back and he says, but better off then both of them is the one who never saw life. Job is the one that told us that the first time. Isn't it interesting that they both have a very limited knowledge of the revelation of God? Incredible. But Solomon says, if I look around and I just see the way things are, wow, is this life really worth it? He goes on to talk about the fact that even accumulation comes from rivalry. We can't even have good relationships because we are oppressed or oppressors. We are rivals Because Solomon says, you know what? What happens is that men start to work at a venture and they become competitors. And one tries to outdo the other, and that's where they get their wealth. Because they want to have more than the next guy. And so life becomes not a good relationship, but a rivalry. And then he goes down a little farther and he said, there was a certain man without a dependent. He had neither a son nor a brother, but there was no end to all his labor. All he did was work. And sure enough, he piled up a lot. But you know what? Finally, he should have asked, but he never did. What on earth am I laboring and depriving myself of all this for? What am I going to do with it? And so we come down to the end, and Solomon says, even relationships are frustrating. Another famous passage, 3:9-12, he says, two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. And if either of them falls, the one will lift up his companion. But woe to the one who falls and has no one to lift him up. Better a companion, a friend, a partner who supports, helps, and rescues than being by yourself. Solomon continues. He even tells us at the end of chapter 4 that even the town square, the government, is futile and frustrating because there's evil there. He repeats that. If you look at chapter 5, this is very interesting because right in the middle of this book, here's what Solomon tells us. Listen carefully. Guard your steps as you go to the house of God and draw near to listen rather than to offer the sacrifice of fools, for they do not know they are doing evil. Solomon says, come in humility. Don't come talking. Come to listen. We always want to talk, but we hate to listen, don't we? It's no different in Solomon's time. Do not be hasty in word or impulsive in thought. In other words, don't be hasty to try and impress God. Don't try and bring all these sacrifices thinking that you can move God to do what you want him to do, Solomon says. Don't be impulsive to bring up a matter in the presence of God, for God is in heaven and you're on earth. Remember what the pecking order is. Remember the hierarchy. God is the one in charge and in control. So let your words be few. Solomon goes on to tell us later in chapter 5, you know, he who loves money will never be satisfied with money. Isn't that true? In fact, when I read it, I thought, what is the common statement? You ever ask anybody that's fairly wealthy? Not everybody. Shouldn't say that. But many people, you say, well, but how much is enough? And I would always get the comment, just a little bit more. Just a little bit more. And so they never sit back to enjoy it, but they're always pushing. Their satisfaction is never complete. Solomon sees other frustrating things. Riches being hoarded by their owner to his hurt. When those riches go away in a bad investment or a loss, what happens? Here is this man who has spent his entire life accumulating. He has fathered a son, but he can't support him. He's lost his money. And Solomon said, that is sad. Exactly as the man is born, thus will he die. So what's the advantage to him who toils for the wind? Again, the refrain comes. 5:18. Here is what I have seen to be good and fitting, to eat, to drink, and to enjoy oneself in one's labor. And again, what does Solomon add? During the few years of his life which God has given him. You notice that Solomon keeps saying it is God that gives these gifts. It is God that controls our life. Furthermore, 5:19, God has also empowered him to eat from them and to receive his reward and rejoice in his labor. This is the gift of God. Not only is the gift of God the monetary, but the gift of God is the ability to enjoy it. We need to learn from that. God's gift is to enjoy what he has given you and I. Chapter 6. We are slowly moving here towards another idea. But basically in 6, Solomon gives us a sense of the frustration of life. God has given riches and wealth, responding to what Solomon just said. And the man who gets it, he lacks nothing that his soul desires. He wants the money, he wants the wealth, and God has given it to him. Incredible. But God has not empowered him to eat from them, for a foreigner enjoys them. Solomon says, even this is frustration. The man either loses it, he's taken over, he loses his position, war comes, whatever it is, the man who has spent his life accumulating can't even enjoy it because it's given to someone else. Chapter 7, we move to the idea of wisdom. We've seen that life is futile and life is frustrating. Life needs wisdom. Wisdom is preferable, Solomon says, compared to everything else. In chapter 7, the very beginning, he talks a little bit about a good name is better than a good ointment, and the day of one's death is better than the day of one's birth. We read that and we say, wait a minute, why? Why would it be better to die than to be born? Well, because it's better to go to a house of mourning than to go to a house of feasting, because that is the end of every man. Solomon says every man will end up dead. The end of verse 2 says, and the living takes it to heart. In other words, the wise man pays attention. The wise man doesn't just find party after party to drown his soul so that he doesn't have to think about things. The wise man thinks and contemplates. What does this mean? What does this consider in all life? Hard to find the man who will be willing to look at those hard questions. The end of a matter is better than its beginning. Verse 8 of chapter 7. Why? Because you've come to a conclusion. It's very, very interesting, because he talks about the idea that fools are quick to talk. And that's the idea here, is that a fool will come at the beginning of something without ever figuring it out, and he will just start talking about what he knows or what he thinks or what's going on. You ever met somebody like that? They're an expert at everything, right? And they're going to tell you how it all works. But they haven't even had the time to sit down and figure it out or really understand what's going on. That's the fool compared to the wise man. And Solomon tells us it's better to be wise. But then he says in verse 15, I have seen everything during my lifetime of futility. There is a righteous man who perishes in spite of his righteousness. And there's a wicked man who prolongs his life in spite of his wickedness. He says it's backwards. It doesn't work the way it's supposed to work. And this is frustrating, it's futile, and my wisdom can't even help me out of this problem. He says in verse 16, so pay attention that you do not be excessively righteous and do not be overly wise. Why should you ruin yourself? Do not be excessively wicked and do not be a fool. Why should you die before your time? We read it and we say, what on earth is Solomon talking about? Does he say, well, just be a little wicked, be a little righteous, and maybe you'll make it through? No. What Solomon is really saying is he's saying, don't be excessively righteous. Don't try and be the most righteous guy on the block in order to influence God. Because I just told you that sometimes the righteous die, sometimes the wicked live longer. Don't try and be this overly righteous person that is going to influence God to give me life. Or he says, don't be the wicked person and think that God will not judge you because he hasn't judged. You need to honor God. That's where Solomon is going with all this. At the end of verse 7, there's an interesting figure of speech. It's interesting because in verse 26, Solomon talks a little bit about how the harlot, the adulteress, can affect your life, can ruin your life. Very similar to what we read in Proverbs, okay? Very similar. And he says, I discovered more bitter than death the women whose heart is snares and nets, whose hands are chains. One who is pleasing to God will escape from her, but the sinner will be captured by her. That's consistent with what you and I read in Proverbs. Then Solomon says, behold, I've discovered this, says the preacher, adding one thing to another to find an explanation, which I am still seeking but have not found. I have found one man among a thousand, but I have not found a woman among all these. So we immediately get into the gender issue, right? But that's not what Solomon's saying. Solomon is talking about one who is pleasing to God. And he comes along and he gives a figure of speech and he basically says, you know, he didn't count a thousand. Believe me. He just says, you know, there's like one in a thousand men that I can find that are pleasing to God. And if you look at the other side, women as a figure of speech, man, woman includes everybody, right? So man, I found one out of a thousand. I don't find any in the women. He's not saying there is no woman who is pleasing to God. What Solomon is saying, you know what? You start looking for people that are pleasing to God, they are really, really scarce. They hardly exist. He says, behold, last verse of chapter 7. Behold, I have found only this, that God made them, this is important, because some of your Bibles might say men, but is actually refers to them, back to the man and the woman, and the one who pleases God, okay? He says, I have found that God made them upright, but they have sought out many devices. Give a man enough time, give him some leeway, and he'll figure out a way to do something wrong. That's what Solomon is saying. We move to chapter 8. Solomon is still talking about wisdom. Basically, he comes back, and Solomon is going to tell us that under the sun, wickedness is not always punished. Death is the great equalizer, and only God knows. Listen to 8:17. Solomon says, I saw every work of God. I concluded that man cannot discover the work which has been done under the sun. Man can't figure it out. Even though man should seek laboriously, he will not discover it. I don't care how hard you work, you're not going to figure it out because God is the one that made the times. And though the wise man should say, I know, he can't discover. So Solomon says, don't listen to him. He's a fool. Not a wise man, he's a fool. Because the guy that comes and tells you he's got it all figured out, he doesn't. Men are in the hand of God, says Solomon. Listen to this. For I have taken all this to heart and explain it, that righteous men, wise men, and their deeds are in the hand of God. Man does not know whether it will be love or hatred. Anything awaits him. It is the same for all. There is one fate for the righteous and for the wicked, for the good, for the clean, and for the unclean, for the man who offers a sacrifice and for the one who does not offer sacrifice. As the good man is, so is the sinner. As the swearer is, so is the one who is afraid to swear. In other words, we will all die. We will all finish this life in a casket. Solomon says, you won't see a hearse carrying a U-Haul, right? You can't take it with you. And besides that, it's frustrating because you don't always get what you earned. Life doesn't always work that way. So down in the middle of 7, we get the refrain again. Go then, eat your bread in happiness, drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. What did I say a little earlier? Did you catch it? That God is the one that allows us to get what we get, what mankind gets, but God also allows mankind to enjoy it. So in that sense, God has already approved of your work. It doesn't say that that work is going to get you to heaven. Solomon's not talking about that. Saying if God gave it to you, he's approved it, he's destined it for you, so take it and enjoy it. Don't worry about it. Eat it and enjoy it. He says, let your clothes be white all the time. In other words, maybe referring to luxurious clothing. Because then he says, and let oil not be lacking on your head. Take care of yourself. Enjoy the delicacies, the luxuries. He doesn't say consume yourself with them. Do you notice? He just says enjoy them. Enjoy life with the woman whom you love all the days, get this, of your fleeting life. It's like Solomon has to throw that in to remind us what's going on, right? Which he has given you, even your fleeting life God has given you, right? Under the sun here on earth. For this is your reward in life and in your toil in which you have labored under the sun. In the next chapter or two, Solomon talks a lot about wisdom. He goes through the whole idea of the fact that, you know, wisdom is better. But you know what? Sometimes wisdom can be forgotten. What you do that's wise, someone forgets. Maybe what you do that's wise, somebody ignores. Maybe somebody just doesn't want to listen to you. So just because you have wisdom doesn't mean that everything works the way you think it should or even that it should. And you know what? A little foolishness is weightier than wisdom. In other words, Solomon says, you know what? A little sin, a little folly can mess up a whole lot of wisdom. You can be wise, but you can do something in sin and mess all that up. Your reputation, whatever. He goes on to talk about the fact that even rulers are not necessarily wise. And so if you're under a ruler who is not wise, it doesn't matter how wise you are. You're contending in an area where somebody else is ruling over you, and their wisdom, lack of it, is in a sense, affecting you and holding you down. Chapter 11, we come. I think really in chapter 11, Solomon is very basically talking about the first 6 verses Solomon says to us. See, he talks about cast your bread on the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to 7 or even to 8, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth. And whether a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, wherever the tree falls, that's where it lies. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you don't know the activity of God who makes all things. Sow your seed in the morning. Do not be idle in the evening, for you don't know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. All Solomon is saying to you and I is he's saying, you know what? Be diligent in your work. Be wise. You know, diversify. Don't put all your eggs in one basket. Don't sit home and take your money and stuff it under your mattress. Go do that venture. Cast your bread out there. Do what you think you ought to do, but be wise about it. And be diligent. Don't be a fool and be lazy. That's really what he's saying. And so as we wind up Ecclesiastes, listen to Solomon. He says in 11:7, the light is pleasant and it is good for the eyes to see the sun. All Solomon's saying is, you know what? It's good to be alive. It's good to be alive. Because there's many times we could wish ourselves dead rather than going through what others are going through. He says, indeed, if a man should live many years, let him rejoice in them all, and let him remember the days of darkness, for they will be many. He warns us. And isn't it true? You and I can't keep the darkness away. We live through it, in spite of it. And he says, everything that is to come will be futility. In other words, there is always an end. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young man. Don't be boorish. Don't be pessimistic. Be thankful for what you got from God. Live your life, young man. Follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. The first thing you and I think is, uh-oh, Solomon's telling to go do whatever you want to do, man. Party up. No, Solomon is saying, you know what? First of all, if you have a relationship with God, your ideas should be pure and right. So, whatever those desires are, those impulses in your heart that you would like to do, follow them. Yet know that God will bring you to judgment for all these things. So he says, remove grief and anger from your heart. Put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. Solomon says to you and I, you know what? Even though wisdom is wonderful, it too is fleeting. It doesn't always work, and you can't guarantee life by it. Take a look at chapter 12, and we're going to end here in just a minute. I'm going to read this for you and insert some words, because this is an incredible description of old men. And I want to talk about myself today. Kidding. Listen to what Solomon says. Solomon is in the last chapter of his book. He says, remember also your Creator. Note that he calls him the Creator. Not just God, but he's the God who created, the God who gave everything, supplies everything, keeps everything, sustains everything. That's who we're talking about. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come. Those are the days of aging and death. And the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. You know what? You should know it by, not necessarily by your experience, but by experience of those you know. There's times when people get so old, they say, you know what? Yeah, I'd rather go home to be with the Lord. I don't have much joy in this life. I'm old. It's over. Before the sun and the light, the moon and the stars are darkened. Again, reference to age. And the clouds return after the rain. It's the idea of almost of winter rain. You see that? We have the spring and the summer, the greatness of life. Then the fall comes, and now you're in the winter. The clouds return after the rain. In the day that the watchmen, that's probably our hands, listen, the watchmen of the house tremble. The older you get, you find your hands are not quite as steady as they used to be. The mighty men stoop, probably legs. They don't hold you up as well as they used to. The grinding ones stand idle because they are few. That's your teeth. And those who look through windows grow dim. Those are your eyes. You and I will all suffer this. Me probably before you. But your eyes grow dim as you get older. The doors on the street, probably your ears for hearing, they're shut. In other words, it gets harder to get through to them. They're shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. Because they already talked about grinding, this probably has a sense about voice. That not only does he not see as well, does he not hear as well, but his voice is somewhat subdued. The power, the strength of the voice is gone. And one will arise at the sound of a bird. He doesn't sleep real well because he's getting so old. And all the daughters of song will sing softly. No, they don't sing softly. He just can't hear them, so they sound soft. Right? Furthermore, and this is very literal, men are afraid of a high place and terrors on the road. I don't know about you, but you ever get a little bit more concerned about certain things you do in life because you go, oh, I'm not quite as steady as I used to be. I'm not quite as comfortable getting up on that 12-foot ladder. I think I better stay with my feet on the ground. It's important. The almond tree blossoms. Interesting, because in Israel, the almond tree blossomed sometimes in late winter. It had pink flowers, but the roots were white. So this more than likely refers to the white hair coming to the elderly. The grasshopper drags himself along. Not quite sure what that is, but sometimes we're lucky to just drag ourselves out of bed and into the day, right? The caperberry is ineffective. That was considered an aphrodisiac. So even the sex life is affected. For man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street. The mourners keep their work. They keep mourning. But the one they're mourning for, he's gone. It's all over. Remember him, that is, remember God, before the silver cord is broken. Notice how these all seem to maybe be tied to a well. The silver cord is broken, the golden bowl is crushed, the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel at the cistern is crushed. You will not be able to draw water anymore. Water is the source of life. Oldness, agedness leads to death. What does Solomon say? Then the dust will return to the earth as it was. Probably a reflection of Genesis 3:19. It'll return to the God who gave it. Solomon still hanging on to who is the one that did all this? God. Listen. Solomon ends up Ecclesiastes with 12, 13, and 14. You should read the words before that. I hope you will read Ecclesiastes after listening so you can get it all straight. Here's what Solomon says. The conclusion, when all has been heard, that better should be said the end. Nothing more, but it's emphatic. In other words, don't add a bunch of words into this saying, well, you know, when I stop and think and do this, no, it's the end. The end, Solomon says, the end is fear God, keep his commandments, because this applies to every person. For God will bring every act to judgment, everything which is hidden, whether it is good or evil. He referred up above there to the shepherd, because that's what the wise words are. They're gifts from the shepherd to lead us, to guide us, to give us something firm to hold on to. That shepherd is God. And Solomon ends up his Ecclesiastes story very simply. You know what? Life under the sun is futile. It's frustrating. I don't care how much wisdom I have. It doesn't seem to help. But I know there's one in control. And when I can get beyond the sun, on God's plane, then I can see what's really going on. How do I do that? I fear God. Everything starts with a right relationship with God. That's what Solomon is saying. Respect, honor. He says, give him his due. In other words, treat God the way he deserves. What does he deserve? He's the king of the universe. Solomon says, fear God. Then he says, keep his commandments. Because there will be a time for judgment. How do we do it? We fear him. We recognize and embrace his person, his worth, and his plan. That fear or reverence leads to knowing God. Really knowing him leads to loving him. And loving him leads to obeying him. And loving and obeying him takes care of any fear of judgment, because he is our shepherd. Pray with me. Father, thank you for this book, for Solomon's insight, for Solomon's truthfulness, Lord. Here is a man who did not have much left to conquer towards the end of his life. He was successful by every standard. And yet, Lord, he recognized that being successful under the sun is worthless. The only success we have is in the Son, your Son, because it is him who died for us, him who reconciled us to you, and him through whom all things make sense. So, Father, I ask today that you would teach me, teach us to fear you. Father, we don't want to cower in a corner, but we want to give you the respect, the honor, the glory, everything that you deserve. We are just a speck in eternity, and we're a speck on this map. But Father, you've seen fit to make us your children. We thank you for that, and we love you for that. In your name, amen.